Hello and welcome to the Foot Health Show here on UK Health Radio, your global, real, feel-good radio station. My name is Peter Alton of Circle Podiatry, and it's my aim to raise your awareness of just how important your feet are, to give you the solutions to your foot and leg problems, and to teach you how to prevent future problems. So grab a cuppa, relax, sit back and put your feet up and enjoy learning about the one part of your body that often gets forgotten. That's right, it's your feet. Hello and welcome back once again to the Foot Health Show. You are listening to UK Health Radio, your global, real, feel-good radio station. My name is Peter Alton, your host for today. And I want us just to pose the question today of how do you know what is going on in your foot? Because let's face it, you look down there and you've got this appendage on the end of your leg that you can wiggle around, some of us more than others. You can pull it towards you, you can push it away from you, you can twist it either side, you can roll it around. And every day as you walk around, it does some incredible things. But you don't really know the complexity of what is going on inside. And if you were to turn it into an engineering model, it would be really quite amazing the different things that have to work in different ways within that foot. Different pulley systems, different articulations between the bones, different amounts of pull that you get from some tendons against other tendons. It really is intricate, and it's quite amazing that people can walk as far as they can and put their feet through so many horrendous things as they do. The impact of jumping, the pressure of running and of climbing and of doing all these different activities that we do puts the foot through a lot of strain. It's not actually surprising, though, that quite often we do get people in to us with injuries of various types. And many of you listeners will be thinking, yep, that's me. I've done something in my foot and I had to go and see a podiatrist. Or maybe you didn't go and see a podiatrist. We quite often have people come to us who have had a problem. And when we ask them how long they've had the problem for, it turns out that they've had it for months or even years. The feet do get forgotten about and they do get pushed to one side as not being important. And yet, as I stress on this show all the time, they are important to you. You don't want to get to the stage in life where so many of my clients do, where they're saying, I wish I'd come to you earlier. If only I'd come to you earlier, could you have prevented this from happening? And quite often the answer is, yes, we probably could have prevented your toes from curling up. We could have prevented your toe from hammering. We could have prevented maybe your bunion from being quite so bad as it is. There's so many things, knees, hips, backs, things that can be aggravated by the way your foot works. So some of you may be thinking, well, yeah, I've had this pain for a long time and I really don't know what is going on inside my foot. Others of you may be saying, yeah, I had a pain and I went and saw somebody and they've sorted it out and the pain's gone. And I still don't really know what was going on in my foot, but it's better now. And that made me pose the question, partly as well, because my daughter at the moment is doing at school, the school play, Romeo and Juliet. Of course, the famous saying there, to be or not to be. So I wondered, well, you know, with the feet, should we be asking the question to see or not to see? And the answer really is that sometimes, yes, we do need to see what is going on inside. And sometimes we don't necessarily need to know what is going on inside, or we don't need to see what's going on inside. We can be fairly certain of what is going on inside from the symptoms that the person is experiencing. So quite often we get people come to us and they might actually be saying, oh, do I need some imaging? Can I get some imaging done? And quite often the answer is, well, you know, the likelihood is that what you've got here, the most likely scenario is that it will resolve itself with the treatment we're going to give you fairly easily. And you can have the imaging done, but it probably is just going to confirm what we're saying. And sometimes they choose to go and do that. More often than not, of course, they would choose not to, because imaging can be either a long delay if you're trying to get it on the NHS, or it can be quite expensive if you're going privately. But there are times when we actually do want to have some imaging, because it could be a number of things and the treatment might vary very, very much depending on what the actual problem is. And some things, it is difficult to tell one between the other with just the symptoms. Also, sometimes people's symptoms are a little bit weird, shall we say. Some people's pain threshold is very high and some people's very low. So it's quite a battle we have sometimes to actually tell what is going on in the foot. And that's when, yes, imaging is very, very important. Obviously, if we suspect a break, then it's worth getting that imaged, of course. And there are other circumstances as well where we would have imaging. And there's different types of imaging, of course. There's x-rays, there's MRI scans, there's ultrasound scans, there's CT scans. There's a whole host of different types of imaging, which can vary on suitability, depending on what your problem is and what we suspect the problem to be. But the truth of the matter is that a lot of the time we can progress without doing imaging for a lot of conditions, and therefore you don't necessarily need to see what is happening to be able to resolve your problem. Quite classically, for example, there may be a pain under the big toe joint, a thing which we call sesamoiditis, which is where the sesamoid bones, two little tiny seed bones under the big toe joint there, and they can get a bit inflamed. And it's, you know, we can tell it's warmer in the area, the pain is there, the description. And usually we can resolve that by offloading it and resting it for a while, and we don't need to do imaging. But conversely, of course, it could be that there's a slightly different type of pain there, that there's a nagging ache going on in the overnight, which might suggest that there may be a fracture of some sort there, in which case, of course, we would want to be doing an x-ray. So I'm posing that question really just to let you know that what to expect when you go and see a podiatrist. Will you automatically get imaging? No, you won't automatically get imaging. Some people may be a little bit more prone to referring for imaging than others, but generally speaking, quite often, most of the time I would say, we don't actually need to do the imaging, unless of course the podiatrist you're seeing is specializing in a particular type of injury which does need imaging more regularly, in which case you're going to them probably with that expectation anyway. So today we're going to be talking about a little bit later on an issue which actually does quite often need some imaging, but not, again, it's the imaging there would be more when you've tackled the conservative approach. And when I say conservative, I mean non-surgical approach to the condition. And that's either not worked or over time the thing has deteriorated, then quite often there would be some imaging. And we're going to be talking a little bit today about a condition called hallux abducto valgus, which is one of the chief causes of that classical condition that so many people suffer from, so many people worry about, and that is, of course, bunions.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Listening to the Foot Health Show here on UK Health Radio. And of course, standing is one of the key things that puts force through the foot, pressure through the foot, standing and walking as well. And we maybe will have a song to do with walking later on in the show. But what is our topic for today? Well, I did mention beforehand that the reason for playing that song was Benny King was one of the drifters, and the big toe drifts towards the other toes in a condition called hallux abducto valgus, which is the most common cause of a bunion joint. So what exactly is a bunion joint? Well, when people think of a bunion, most people think of the big lump on the side of the foot where the big toe joins the foot. That is true. Yes, that is where they commonly come. You can get a bunion on the other side of the foot as well, though, on the little toe where it joins the foot. That type of bunion is actually called a tailor's bunion, spelt like the tailor that would be doing the stitching back in the olden days by the candlelight, maybe sitting on the floor, cross-legged, with lots of pressure on his fifth, or her for that matter, but probably his in those days, on their fifth toe, the little toe, causing it to bend inwards and a bunion to come. That's where the name came from, a tailor's bunion. So we're going to actually focus more on the bunion of the big toe joint today. And what it is, it is a bony deformity of the joint at the base of the big toe. Now, the big toe's name, if you remember from previous shows, is called the hallux. That is its proper name. Don't you find it interesting how names come about? This name apparently was from medieval Latin, and it started off as being Alex, A-double-L-E-X, and then was translated into modern Latin, becoming Hallux, and then eventually becoming Hallux. It's weird how names change over time. You know, why do people change the names of things over time? It's very strange. But anyway, that's what the big toe is called, the hallux. And the condition which leads to the classic bunion is called hallux abducto valgus, or often shortened to hallux valgus. So let's just talk a little bit about where it is and what it looks like. So if you've got your foot in front of you right now and you're looking down at your feet, ideally what we should be seeing is that there's the border of the inside of the foot there. So if you've got your 2 feet next to each other, the inside of the left foot and the inside of the right foot, they should be fairly straight. So you go down along the arch, and then when it meets the big toe, it should be all fairly straight. If you've got the beginnings of a bunion coming, there can be a couple of things that you can observe there. One is that the actual joint where the hallux meets the foot, that joint is actually enlarged and bulging out, if you like, on the inside edge of the foot. What you might also observe is that the big toe is actually moving away from the midline, so it is moving away towards the little toes. And that is classically what forms the bunion. There are various stages of bunion formation, and that's something that's quite important, because in the early stages, you're probably not going to get any pain at all. Probably in the middle stages, you're not getting too much, but the latter stages, you can get quite a lot. And that's really important with regards to the type of treatment. Some people just don't like the look of them, and they want to get surgery to get it corrected. And some people are willing to accept the fact that it doesn't look maybe quite as normal and nice as they would have wanted, but they're not getting the pain, so therefore they don't go down the route of surgery. And we'll discuss that a little bit later on. Now, you may be looking at your toe and think, well, I've got a big bump in that area, that big toe joint with the foot. It's very bumpy, but the bump on my foot is not on the outside edge, it's on the top of the toe. It looks very, it even gets painful there sometimes. That is not truly a bunion. It is still a problem with the same joint, but it's not classically called a bunion that. And it's quite often coming because the big toe joint is jamming up with the first metatarsal bone as you walk. When you're trying to bend your foot, it's not allowing it to bend properly, and it's jamming up the top surfaces of the joint, which in turn over time lay down more bone, which in turn over time means it becomes more and more restricted. So something you can actually do right now is have a look at how far up you can bend your big toe joint. So bending your big toe towards you, how far up will it bend towards you? And if it won't bend very far, you want a good 60-70 degrees of bending. If it won't bend that far, then you've probably got a condition which is called hallux limitus, which is a limitation of how much that big toe joint can bend up. Some people will be doing it, some of you listeners will be doing it, and you'll be trying to bend it and it won't bend. Now, that could just be muscle weakness and not able to, but if you are able to reach or get somebody else to, and you try and bend that big toe joint up, some of you will find that it is actually rigid or near rigid, and that is a condition called, you've probably guessed it, hallux rigidus. So both hallux limitus and hallux rigidus aren't true bunion formations, but they are an enlargement of that big toe joint, but normally on the top surface of a joint. Now, you can often get these things linked together. So you can get hallux limitus, you can get hallux rigidus in association with having the changes that are going to form a bunion and hallux abducto valgus. Okay, let's talk a bit about hallux abducto valgus, because that is the sort of a true bunion formation that we're going to be looking at today. So why do people get bunions? And that is a pretty big question to answer. And if you asked a whole load of different clinicians, but podiatrists, physios, orthopedics, you probably get a whole load of different answers. And I'm not going to pretend that I've got the secret answer here. The answer really is that there's a whole host of different things that are conspiring together, and it can be different in different people, I believe. From my experience, 250,000 feet I've seen, quite a few of those have got bunions at various stages of progression. And that's one of the things we should talk about, is that there are different stages. And those of you that sat there looking at your feet a minute ago, you can have a look and sort of really work out what sort of stage you are at. So the first stage is where there's a little bit of a bump on the side of the foot. Maybe you won't even notice that the toe is moving across at all, but there's a little bit of an enlargement of the big toe joint, the joint where the big toe joins the foot, the metatarsal phalangeal joint that we talked about a couple of shows ago. So that's sort of stage one, if you like. Stage two is where there's beginning to be a little bit of misalignment, where the big toe itself, the hallux, is starting to move towards the little toes a little bit. Then we move on to stage three, where there is a little bit more movement. The big toe is beginning to press against the second toe. And if you're looking at your feet right now, you'll probably see that there's no longer a little gap between your big toe and your second toe. And then we get to stage four, where there is really a complete destruction of the toe alignment that should be there. You've got the big toe joint going right over, the big toe leaning towards the little toes. Sometimes it moves under the second toe, so you literally have the second toe crossing over. You know, when you cross your fingers, literally it can look as bad as that when it gets to stage four, which is the really severe stage. So those are the different stages that you can get at. And obviously the earlier we catch it, the better in many respects. But it doesn't alter the fact that there's so many different complex things going on that once a bunion does start forming, quite often it will be a gradual degenerative change that's going to continue to take place. And even when we throw everything we've got at it, it can be very challenging. There are people out there who would say that orthotics don't make any difference whatsoever to the formation of a bunion. I argue that fact myself, because I know that when we've done orthotics for people, people who have been in severe pain with their bunion joint, that when they've had orthotics, that pain can disappear and go away gradually, admittedly, but go away. That seems to suggest that we are helping prevent the forces that are creating the problem in the first place. But it is a difficult one to know and to measure, really, as to whether or not there is an ongoing change taking place. So in my view, the reason why a bunion joint is such a common problem is that, as we've mentioned earlier, the foot is so complex, and particularly with the big toe joint. The big toe joint, of course, is the most powerful one. It is the one that should be propelling you forward as you push off. So you can imagine, if anything is pulling in an abnormal way when you're doing that, or if you're pushing off and force is going through the foot in the wrong way, then over time that is going to lead to things moving, reacting to that force. I was with my son earlier on, and we were just trying to do a little bit of physics, if you like. And I got him to hold a bottle of water, which is this one's a 1.5 litre bottle of water. Choose what weight you want. And the bottle is only 2/3 full. And I got him to hold it with the water nice and level. literally with his arm outstretched in front of him, and got him to do a biceps curl. So you literally are just bringing that bottle and the hand towards you. And as you do that, keeping the water level, you don't really feel like the arm is trying to move in any direction other than towards you. It's quite a nice, simple movement. Now, if you just tilt your wrist slightly so that the water goes to one end of the bottle, and then try doing that again, and you will feel that it's trying to pull you whichever way the water is. Pretty common sense, really. I mean, it's not rocket science. But the force is altering the pull on my arm as I bend my arm. And you can imagine if I was doing that a lot, then it would work the muscles on that side slightly different than it would on the other side. And that's really, to a degree, what's going on within the foot as you walk in. If there's a problem with maybe the alignment of the tendons, maybe the attachment of tendons, where they're attached, anything that changes the way that things are pulling is going to lead to abnormal forces. Even just the strength, if muscles on one side are stronger than the other, then they're going to lead to abnormal pull. And that's one of the factors that can lead to a bunion formation, abnormal forces pulling on the joint because of muscle formation, because of muscle position, the position of the attachments. There's other reasons as well, though, of course. You've got, in my other show earlier, I mentioned about the sesamoid bones. So you've got the two little sesamoid bones under the first metatarsal phalangeal joint. And those sesamoid bones are, they act like a little pulley system. The tendon runs through them. And if there's a problem with those, then, of course, that can lead to the tendon pulling in an abnormal way. Other factors that can cause problems with this is that the ligaments can be lax. So some people are hypermobile. That can be a problem. It can lead to, if you're hypermobile, to situations where things are going to give easier. If, you know, you might have somebody with a normal amount of force going through the foot in a normal way, but it's just not held together very well and things go AWOL a little bit. One of the common causes of bunions is a foot which is pronated. Now, we, I'm sure, have mentioned this on the show before. A pronated foot is one where when you stand in, the foot arch collapses inwards. And it's normal to have that motion happening every step you take. But if it happens abnormally, i.e. happens too much, or very critically as well, in this case, happening for too long, then you are in a position where you're actually pushing off on a foot that isn't very stable. So pronation happens for two key reasons. One is to allow shock absorption up the body, and the other is that it unlocks all the forefoot bones and the midfoot bones so that they're loose. And in being loose, the foot is collapsed. The foot can adapt to uneven ground that we're designed to run around on, which, of course, is pretty important. If you are running around on uneven ground, you want something that can adapt to it. But it does mean that the foot isn't very stable. Now, what should happen is that the foot should form a good arch again, ready to push off. You know an arch, it's a really strong structure. If you look at some of the buildings with arches, historical buildings, you can often find that there's an archway left and some of the walls fallen down, but the archway is still there, even without any mortar in it, because they just put a keystone in to hold it in place. Really strong structure. That's what we should be pushing off on. If we're not pushing off on it, then the foot isn't so stable, and therefore abnormal forces will play havoc with it. They'll push things in the wrong position, and that's one of the causes of a bunion joint. So there's various things you can see from within the foot that can cause it, but there's other things as well that can cause it. So certain activities can cause it, putting abnormal forces on it. Certain footwear absolutely can. And that's something that I really want you to focus on as well. People often will blame only the footwear. My view is that, yes, footwear plays a part, but the biggest part is the type of foot that you've got. Bear in mind with your shoes that you should really have something which is going to hold the foot back in the shoe so that it doesn't have a lot of force on the toes. So a laced shoe is always going to be best for your main walking. And it shouldn't be too pointed. And that's probably, those two reasons are probably largely why ladies are more prone to getting problems with bunions than guys are. It's, I'm not sure what exactly the statistic is, but it's something like 10 times more likely. We do see bunions in guys, but ladies, you tend to get more of them. Now, bunions can start fairly early on in life, but they can often become aggravated after someone, a lady, has a baby. And the reason being is that whilst you are pregnant, and in the latter stages of pregnancy particularly, obviously you've got a lot more force going through the body because you're pregnant and you're a lot heavier, but also the hormones are changing. The hormone relaxin is being released into your body, which tells the ligaments, particularly in the pelvis, to become more elastic, to allow the pelvis to open up. Now, the problem is that relaxin flies around the whole body, and it isn't just targeting the pelvis, it targets other ligaments as well. And therefore, other things can become a little bit less tight, if you like. So quite often, these sort of things, fallen arches, bunion joints, can become worse at this stage. And although you may not see it immediately, quite often it's we get people coming into us saying, you know what, all my problems started after I had my last child. And it often is not necessarily the first child. It's quite often the second one that seems to just exacerbate the problem even more. So that's some of the situation with regarding causes of bunions. Now, one thing I want to just talk about very briefly as well is that sometimes people find that suddenly the bunion looks a lot worse. So some of you are probably looking at your feet earlier on and you're thinking, well, my left one looks a lot worse than my right one, or vice versa. There can be various factors for that. Often people have one leg longer than the other, and therefore one foot is also usually the same one that's longer leg, same foot is usually a bit bigger. Obviously, that can put more pressure on it in the shoes. But there is another reason why one bunion might look larger than another, or why maybe it actually becomes larger and then maybe it goes down again. And that is that the soft tissues over that bony prominence can become aggravated. So you can actually get the joint is still the same size, but the whole thing looks a lot bigger because you get something called a bursa happening over the top of the joint. And a bursa is, it's like a blister, but it's a deep sac of fluid that comes to protect that joint. And usually it happens when you get pressure on it from a footwear, and then it's moving around. And between the bone and the leather of the shoe, you've got your skin, and you get this bursa underneath the skin. And it can become inflamed. You get bursitis. You can even get a little sinus in there, which can get infection into it. It can be quite nasty. And normally that would be quite enlarged and swollen and red and uncomfortable. And as soon as you protect it and help it to heal up again, then that will go back down again to whatever the bunion joint was like before. So some people do come into us with that flaring up situation. Two other things I should mention. One, of course, is the style of footwear. So ladies, we've talked about lace-ups, but also high heels and two-pointed, not going to improve things. It's going to be putting more pressure in that area. And the other thing I want to mention is children. Children can quite often show the early signs of a little bit of bunion formation coming, particularly in the teens. And if you think about it, it's because the foot structure, the way the foot's working, may well be putting abnormal forces through the foot, but actually the foot is very soft as well. Most of the bones aren't fully formed, totally fully formed, until you're 18. Some of them are before that, but there's lots of softer areas. So if you're putting abnormal forces through the foot, it is going to lead to some unusual deformities taking place. So as I say time and time again on this show, you should go and see a podiatrist, or for that matter, take your kids to go and see a podiatrist and get your feet checked. If you're not sure what's going on with them, then get them checked by somebody who does know. So if you are in the London area, if you're in the Surrey area, then by all means do come along and see us at our practice, at Circle Podiatry. We'd be more than happy to help you out. And it's something which, you know, initially it's just having an assessment just to see, well, you know, how bad are things and how bad are things likely to get in the future. It's certainly worth doing that. And my recommendation is that all kids should get checked out, ideally a couple of times actually before they go to secondary school, to pick up on problems, but also to to help them to have an awareness of the importance of their feet, because too many of us go through life not paying any attention to our feet. The more we can get it into our kids' heads that actually they've got to last you a lifetime, they are important, then the better it is. Particularly if any of them ever develop diabetes, it's so much better to have looked after your feet if you do develop something like diabetes, rather than going through life not even thinking about them and then suddenly having this devastating disease which can play havoc with them. Maybe you were sitting there earlier on and you were looking at your feet as we spoke about checking for the angle of the big toe joint and how deviated the big toe is, whether it is pointing towards the other toes or not. And maybe you were feeling good about yourself, or maybe you were thinking, it's not that bad after all. One thing I just want to point out at this point is that often when you're standing, it is accentuated, made a little bit worse. Okay, so what I'd like you to do is either now, or if you're somewhere where you can't do this barefoot, then wait till you get home, just stand barefoot and have a look at down at your feet. Because to be honest, who does that normally? I mean, normally you're in your shoes and socks, and if you're out by the pool or walking along the beach, you're not really going to necessarily be looking at what your feet are doing when you're standing. But just have a look and see. And you will probably see that it is accentuated a bit. Your toe does look like it's going over further. Maybe the bunion looks a little bit worse as well. And that just gives you a bit of a truer indication of what is going on and probably what's in store. Because as things deteriorate, which they tend to do with age, as things deteriorate, you will find that not only is it deviated more when you're weight-bearing, but also as you're non-weight-bearing, sitting there, you'll gradually see that it has moved over further.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
So I'm guessing you all want to know, well, what can we do for bunions? It's one of the most common questions that we get asked in clinic, and people come in to us with this little bump on the side of their foot. Maybe it's a bit red, maybe they come hobbling in their tight little pointed high heels, or maybe they're a bit clever and they come in their trainers. But we know full well that, you know, when they're on their way to work, when they're at work, they're wearing those high heels, those pointed shoes. And they'll ask us, well, what can we do for it? Well, the first thing, of course, is to wear suitable footwear, particularly when you are walking. Something with a deep enough toe box, something with a long enough toe box, and the right shape toe box. I mean, let's face it, a lot of shoes that we squeeze our feet into, particularly ladies, forget that you've actually got five toes and that the shape of the foot, they tend to be very, very pointed. Some people get by that by getting a bigger size of shoe and the point is all beyond the foot, if you like. But that in itself isn't necessarily good, because it can often mean that the shoe bends in the wrong place, which isn't good either. So footwear is a critical part in both preventing the thing coming in the first place, but also in just trying to slow down the deterioration of it and slow down the exacerbation of the problem. So I mentioned earlier about bursas coming over the joint. Well, that very often can be the case when a shoe is not fitting properly and putting extra pressure on it. We can get away with pads, so you can get pads that stick over the bunion, or you can get ones made of gel and other substances that have a toe loop that go around the big toe and then sit over, and those can cushion the joint a little bit and take some of the pressure off it. That can help, sometimes particularly if there's a corn come on the bunion, or if there is that bursa there, it can help. Obviously taking painkillers can help if it's a very painful bunion. And there are various other things as well. One of the things we do use is orthotics, which can change the pressures, the forces going through the foot, the way the foot works. I mentioned earlier about pronation and how the forefoot and midfoot are unlocked during pronation. And if that's happening at the wrong point in the gait cycle, at the wrong point when your foot is flat on the ground and you're about to push off on it, if it's still in that collapsed position, then that isn't necessarily good for keeping a stable lever to push off on. And orthotics will often try to keep the foot working in a better position at that point in the gait cycle. So they're called functional orthotics because they change the function the foot, the way it's working, change the forces for it. So that can be very critical. Oh, yes, I often get asked about splints as well, bunion splints, night splints and day splints. There's very limited evidence on those. And personally, the experience I've had of patients who've used them, they don't get on with them, particularly the night ones. They just get uncomfortable and they don't get on with them. Other things are little dividers, gel dividers that sit in between the big toe and the next one. But that does tend to put pressure on the lesser toes, on the smaller toes as well. So not necessarily good. Finally, of course, there's surgery. And surgery, it should be considered, definitely. Generally speaking, we would only recommend it if the person's in a lot of pain, because quite often you can end up in worse pain with worse problems after the surgery. The foot is a very complex thing to operate upon because of how complex it is and the forces going through it. It's a very long time for recovery. You can be, you know, up to 6 months even or beyond without being able to get your foot into your normal type of shoe because of the swelling going on there. And you can be non-weight bearing for a good few months having had surgery. Depends on the operation. There's lots of different types of surgery that might be dependent upon how your bunion presents and also on maybe the surgeon's preference. There's osteotomies. There's arthrodesis, which is actually where you make the toe rigid. And then there's some arthroplasty where bits are actually cut away. And then there are other types of surgery as well with implants and things like that that can be done. So there's lots of different things. And I hope to have a surgeon on in the near future who will be able to talk us through the different procedures and what he recommends. So watch out for that in the coming weeks. Well, that's all we've got time for this week, folks. Thank you so much for joining me here on the Foot Health Show on UK Health Radio, your global, real, feel-good radio station. All that remains is for me to say, have a fantastic week. Keep safe, keep those legs and feet moving, and don't forget to tune in again with your friends next week.